This is The Huddle.
It's not this. This is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to 2. The Huddle.
Welcome in to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, Tom Wassel, and Stacey Rost. We're going to get you guys a preview of the Seahawks' upcoming game against the San Francisco 49ers. But before we do that, we're going to have to take a look back, you guys. But don't worry, there's still some highlights. There's still some fun moments. In fact, one of them right now, we're going to go ahead and head down. Cut number one, Curtis. I don't know if you guys remember this. Maybe the best play of the night, this one from DK Metcalf.
First and goal. Russell takes a shotgun snap. Carson, oh no! It's picked off, going the other way. It's Buda Baker down the near sidelines. Nobody's going to catch him unless Metcalf can. He is sprinting. He is running. He dives and he catches him. DK Metcalf catches Buda Baker on a little dump pass into the right flat. Russell never saw him and he steals the ball away.
You know it's a good day, Dave, where even in an interception, there's a highlight from your receiver. This is a game that got away from Seattle, but wow, there were moments, I think, for Seahawks fans to enjoy, to be happy with.
You know, Ryan Roland-Smith texted me the other day and was asking me, hey, what's up with this DK Metcalf guy? Is he worthy of all the hype? And I must have sent him 1,000 words in a text about how this guy last year was the best rookie I've ever been around, and that's including like Lofa Tupu, Marcus Trufant, Tyler Lockett. He just, his humility, and that more than made up for him not securing the ball across the goal line against Dallas, and that was inspiring. Here's the other thing too: they get four plays, they stop them on fourth down. On the other end of the drive that the Seahawks took all the way down the field, he had a really pretty vicious crackback block on the defensive end linebacker. And then Dwayne Brown pulls around and leads Carlos Hyde up the sideline for 34 yards. But that whole thing started because of DK's block. So, I mean, here's two unselfish things. This guy's an amazing receiver, and he makes an incredible defensive play. And I don't think you can put more effort into what he did there. And then, he ends up having a block that helps spring a 34-yard touchdown run.
Jake, it's a game that got away from Seattle, but what do you take from it offensively?
What do you take from it offensively is the idea that this offense is still a major problem for any defense in the league. Arizona came into that game giving up. They were second in the league in points given up. I mean, they were, I think heading into that game, they'd only given up 19 points per game. They give up 34 to the Seattle Seahawks offense. So it just is another reminder that this offense is a problem for any defense, that you have to, as any NFL team or any NFL opponent goes up against the Seahawks, you're kind of shaking in your boots because you know you're going to be in for a really, really difficult matchup across the board. Passing, running the ball. This group does an outstanding job. And so I think from that really stood out to me. You take away those three uncharacteristic mistakes from Russell Wilson, and this is a tremendous night offensively. So that's really the takeaway that I have about this group, that this group is still potent. It still can get after anybody. The 49ers this week, they're going to have to deal with the Seahawks.
I wonder if the Arizona Cardinals were exactly what we thought they were going to be, to paraphrase Dennis Green. The 49ers seem like an unknown. Like, going up against Arizona, their offense turned out to be what we thought it was going to be. Their defense played pretty well, especially down the stretch. San Francisco, they've got all these injuries, and yet their defense is still playing out of their minds, and their offense seems, there's like a huge variance in what they're in what they may be capable of. So, Dave, I feel like evaluating this game is a lot tougher than the last one.
Yeah, well, I agree. And you mentioned all the injuries, and here's the thing that scares me about the 49ers, and I thought this last year, and this is why I thought they were going to win the Super Bowl last year. And I thought they were the best team in the NFL in spite of Baltimore and all that they did. They are really well coached. You look at their running game right now, which I think they're number 9 right now, number 8, I think, in the NFL they are. They're 138 yards a game. They've had 11 different guys carry the ball, and they just execute. They are so well coached, both on offense and defense. So It's that part is scary because, yeah, they have had a ton of injuries. But, you know, and then you look at some of the losses that they've had are kind of a mystery, you know, getting killed at home by Miami. They got beat by Philadelphia. But they're starting to click right now, and they're starting to play well in spite of the injuries. So that's the thing that really stands out to me is that they just are a very well-coached team, very disciplined. They execute. And then you get guys with just a ton of effort. Like, you know, the yards after catch, yards after contact. They call them the Yak Boys down there. They made up some name like, you know, Splash Brothers, whatever. And, you know, these guys are fighters. And, you know, they on ESPN, they have a little clip of a 3rd and 16 where Deebo Samuel last year makes a catch. And then, you know, I can't remember the phrase that they use, but they try to get upfield as fast as they possibly can. It's like a drop step or whatever. And, you know, that's just kind of what they're all about. They fight for every yard. You watch Kittle and his blocks. I mean, he just crushes people. So it's – and then that Kyle Juszczyk guy, I mean, they use him quite a bit. He doesn't have a ton of yards, but he's a great blocker. They overwhelm you at the point of attack defensively. The Seahawks are going to have to be really physical in this game to win. So it's going to be a challenge in a different way than it was last week against Arizona.
And Dave, you bring up that physicality because that was going to be, you know, my point as I'm listening to you talk is the Seahawks, they're going to have to bring a level of physicality that they have yet to have shown thus far this season. Can they do that without Jamal Adams? Could they do that with not adding Snacks Harrison? I mean, I believe that they're probably going to add Snacks Harrison with the cut to Anthony Rush, but yeah. You just never know. I mean, do they have that ability to, you know, be physical like they need to eliminate some of that run game and some of that yards after catch?
Yeah, and that's a physical with a capital F, Jake, is how you put it, when it's really, really needed. And, you know, that I'll tell you what, there are some guys, and we'll see with Snacks Harrison. You know, unfortunately, they don't get Dunlap until next week, but he's a really physical player. He just plays all over the field. I don't know where they're going to line him up, but he's a good football player. But I'll tell you one guy. KJ has played really physical, really well. Jordan Brooks, I did a football 101 thing on him, and his reads, and a couple of plays I didn't put in there was him just crushing offensive linemen. You know, he's attacking them. He's explosive. And, you know, he makes great reads. And, you know, he did two things in that game that was really special. One was picking up a deep crosser, and they tried to throw it to him. And, you know, later on, that didn't get done, and it was the longest play of the game, a deep crossing pattern to David Arnold, the tight end. So, you know, he did that well, and then he read his keys on that goal line play where it was a quarterback sweep, and, you know, he read the triangle of the two guards and the center blocks back, guard pulls, he beats the guy to the point of attack, and then tackles Kyler Murray for, you know, a loss there. So they do have the ability to do that. I think they're just going to have to step it up, and I think that's going to be, you know, the sort of battle cry going into this game is be physical.
And that wasn't the only news for Seattle this week. Seahawks also getting active before November 3rd's trade deadline, acquiring defensive end Carlos Dunlap from the Bengals in exchange for center B.J. Finney, one of Seattle's free agent additions this past offseason, and a 7th-round pick in 2021. Dave, when you look at Carlos Dunlap, what he can bring this team, you guys had an interesting conversation yesterday with a Bengals.com reporter who basically said, look, this is a Cincinnati defense that was starting to adjust with a new scheme to some of their younger players and the strengths of some of their younger players. They had been performing poorly against the run for at least two seasons. They wanted to get better there, and it wasn't a strength of Carlos Dunlap necessarily.
Yeah.
But it sounds like there's still a lot of optimism that he can get to the passer. Even at 31 years old, he can still be effective there.
It's an interesting trade because it really works out, I think, for both. I mean, they get a 7th-rounder, and then they get a backup center guard that they're pretty familiar with B.J. Finney. And then for the Seahawks, you know, he just didn't work out here. And I don't know if he wasn't ready. I don't know if this is maybe one of those COVID things that, you know, they didn't get their eyes on him. But just the way Pete talked about him was very kind of mysterious during camp that, you know, he's not quite ready yet. So they kind of gave up something. And then for Carlos Dunlap, yeah, that defense is moving in a different direction. It doesn't mean I don't think that his skills have, tailed off. I think it's just that the way they want to play there, he didn't fit in. And so you saw his reps start to go down, and then all of a sudden he started, you know, kind of making a stink there. He made an appropriate amount of stink to get himself
with a traded. Twitter post about advertising his
Dave,
house.
You know what? You know what's crazy is, you know, talking about the stink, like, why did he have to do that if they're going in a different direction? The Bengals have, they don't trade people. Like, you look at their history of trades, they've only made, like, four trades in the past, like, 40 years. And their latest trade was Carson Palmer, and that's because he said he was retiring. So he retired, and then they traded him. Like, they don't do it. So as an organization, they disagree with it. So I'm not saying Carlos Dunlap did the right thing, but, man, he really had to make a stink for them to be willing to give him up.
That is an amazing stat that you just threw out there, Jake.
It really is.
Seven, eight trades.
That was the last trade?
The last trade was Carson Palmer for, yes.
Wow.
I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah.
And we're going to get back to this trade with the Bengals. We're actually going to have Ben Baby, who's an ESPN Bengals reporter, on with us. Ben Baby at from ESPN. That's coming up at 12:30, so don't worry. We'll dive right back into this. Coming up next, though, we're going to be joined by Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. There's a couple injuries we're all keeping an eye on, chief among them running back Chris Carson and safety Jamal Adams. Are they going to play Sunday? We'll ask John next.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle with Tom Wassel, Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Joining us right now, Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. John, I know you might not have an answer to it, but I'm going to ask you, are we going to see Jamal Adams this Sunday on the field for Seattle?
I'm sorry, you cut out there. Did you say Jamal Adams?
Jamal Adams.
All right. Yeah, you're right. I don't have an answer. We were going into last week thinking it was going to happen. You know, Pete Carroll seemed pretty optimistic about this week, and then he was unable to practice. I do wonder, you know, maybe we'll find out from Pete Carroll on Friday. He was listed as illness and the groin injury. So, you know, maybe that was why Pete Carroll thought he was going to be able to practice, and then he didn't, as maybe something came up with the illness side of it. But yeah, we'll have to see. I think if he's out there today, there's a decent shot at it, but if you can't get him on the field today, I don't know how likely it is he can play after missing the time he has without at least a couple days of practice. So, you know, as they've been saying all along, they're going to be careful. They want to make sure that they don't bring him back too soon. But, yeah, you'd love to get him back, especially for this 49ers offense and Kittle and all those things.
All right, Boyle, it's an injury question, but it's very general. So I want to, you know, what about the running back situation? And we know that, you know, that,
man.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. I mean, the way it looked yesterday, I mean, it looked like DJ Dallas was pretty much it. But, and then I don't see anybody on the practice squad as far as a running back goes. You know, what, just tell us the general state of the running back position right now.
Yeah, we'll have to wait to see later in the week. But as of now, it is a little concerning. You've got three of your four running backs did not practice yesterday with injuries. Pete Carroll's not ruling anybody out yet. It sounds like they're going to probably take it to the end of the week with all those guys. Just reading between the lines the way Pete Carroll talked about it, I think both Hyde and Homer at least have a shot. Carson with that foot is probably going to be one that they take all the way to Sunday and just see how he responds. But if all three of those guys can't go, that leaves you DJ Dallas and a fullback. You're probably going to have to get somebody else ready to play there, whether that's, you know, one of their receivers can play a few snaps or something. But you got to have a backup plan. It kind of reminds me of what we saw in the second half of that Arizona game last year where everybody got hurt and Travis Homer was all they had, and they kind of had to tell him to, hey, take it easy. Don't be crashing into every player you can because you're all we got. So, you know, maybe you just lean on Russell Wilson a little more. You know, I saw somebody tweet Puna Ford's fullback highlights from high school. I'm all for giving Puna a few carries. That could be a lot of fun. But
I'm very pro Puna the running back.
Well, I know what's going to happen. There's going to be a flood of texts that come in. DK Metcalf. DK Metcalf can do anything.
Sure.
He can do anything. He can rush the passer. He can carry the ball, whatever you need.
I'm sure he could, but I don't think you take one of your two best receivers out of their job. If you're going to have a receiver do it, maybe you look at one of the guys a little further down the depth chart.
There you go.
Hey, John, it's a little confusing sometimes for our audience as we're talking about guys that are on IR, that are set to return to IR, things of that nature. What does that mean for somebody like Rasheem Green when it says he's designated to return? And is there any other guys that are in that same position on this roster?
Yeah, so basically the way the IR rules work, they changed it again. It's changed a couple times. The new one this year is guys only need to be on IR for 3 weeks to come back, and there's not a limit of guys you can bring back. It used to be, you know, only one guy and then only two guys. But the designate for return part basically means they're allowed to practice without taking up a roster spot. So Rasheem Green and Phil Haynes both returned to practice. They brought back Colby Parkinson off the NFI list earlier, as well as the defensive back, who I'm totally drawing a blank on his name, and
Reed?
I apologize, claimed off. Yes, Reed, thank you, DJ Reed from San Francisco. So all those guys can be back practicing now, and once you return, it kicks off a three-week window where you're allowed to practice without being on the roster. After those 3 weeks, then it becomes they got to add into the roster or then they're done for the season. So that's kind of how that works for all those guys.
John, you want to give us your evaluation of the Carlos Dunlap trade, what was given up, what came back, and what position it leaves the Seahawks in?
I mean, I love it. It addresses their biggest need by far. I mean, we've seen the defense as a whole has struggled, and, you know, you can point to that pass rush as a big factor. And when you're not affecting quarterbacks, it makes it hard on everybody. So you add a guy who's been just a consistent, really good pass rusher throughout his career. Hasn't always had the huge seasons, but I think it's 7 or 8 straight years with 7.5 sacks at least, and he can use that length to bat down passes. He's a really good all-around defensive end, and he didn't have to give up a lot to do it. We saw this last year with Quandre Diggs. Guys can come relatively cheap this time of year if a team's looking to make a deal. So you had a really good player for a 7th-round pick. You move B.J. Finney, who was a guy they really liked in free agency, and it was a tough situation for him to come in with an abbreviated offseason, and Ethan Posick did a great job and won that center job. So you moved a guy that, not that they didn't like him, but that wasn't helping you on the field at the moment, and a 7th-round pick for a guy that you think can upgrade your defense quite a bit. I love the move.
John, what's the latest on some of the guys that haven't necessarily returned to practice yet, specifically Rashad Penny and Darrell Taylor?
Yeah, I mean, Penny sounds like he's making really good progress. They just, again, you want to take it cautious, and with an ACL, you don't want to bring a guy back too soon, but it sounds very much like he's running really hard and he'll be back. I don't want to put a timetable on, but I think he'll be back sometime, you know, in the next few weeks, at least practicing, if not ready for games. Taylor, they've been, you know, a little more vague on just because I don't think they know. You know, it's a guy that came in with an injury from college, that leg injury, he had to have surgery in the offseason. And, if, you know, Pete Carroll has said in the past that not being around with their guys all offseason probably did put him back a little bit of, you know, he's having to do the rehab on his own because he couldn't be here with no offseason workouts. So, you know, they're hoping to get him. You would love to add him to that pass rush late in the year if you can, but I don't think that one's in it by any means either.
Boyle, what did you hear from Pete and the coaches in general about Jordan Brooks? I was really impressed. He was very physical. Talked about him at the outset of the show that, you know, this is going to be what they need to bring to the table against San Francisco because they're a physical team. And you know, I thought Jordan Brooks came in and, I don't know, he played 40-45% of the snaps, but sure looked good, sure looked physical, and his reads, everything. What'd they say about Jordan's performance?
Yeah, they really liked it. I mean, you look at the stats, don't jump out at you. He had 7 tackles, 1 for a loss, but you can just hear the excitement in Pete Carroll's voice when he talks about him. The speed he plays with, I mean, the most obvious play was that tackle for loss down in the red zone on the stop after the DK Metcalf tackle, that stop they got down there, the 3rd down play where Kyler tries to take it out wide and Brooks just chasing down from behind for a loss. So they really like him. You know, Pete Carroll, there's been a few times where he hasn't been asked about Jordan Brooks, but he's, you know, these big picture defense getting better type conversations, and he brings up Brooks's name unsolicited. He's a guy they see being a big part of their defense going down the stretch here. And, you know, considering how little he's played, both because, you know, early in the year he was behind all those guys on the depth chart, and then he got hurt when he did get his chance. So he's barely played, so you would have to think he's just going to keep getting better as he gets more comfortable.
John, how important is it for guys like Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf to, you know, almost kind of have sometimes they have big performances together, and sometimes they go off and in one game, you know, one guy takes the lead versus the other. Now, how big is that for this offense as they're continuing to need to put up, you know, it looks like 30-plus points per game?
Yeah, and that's why it's not very many teams can do this, but when you have two truly elite receivers, it makes all the difference in the world. Because we saw, I mean, DK Metcalf kind of called this last week. We asked him about matching up with Patrick Peterson, and he said, you know, look, if they want to do that, that's going to create opportunities for other guys. And sure enough, they did a pretty good job keeping DK Metcalf to a quiet game, but Tyler Lockett had one of the best games in Seahawks history of 15 catches, 200 yards, three touchdowns. I mean, that puts him in very, very rare company. So, yeah, it's, you know, if you only have one great receiver, a team can scheme against that, and you take your chances with the other guys, and you might be able to slow an offense down. But when you have both those guys going like they are this season, you know, some games you might see them both get around 100, which we've seen, and some games you slow one guy down and the other guy just goes off.
He is Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. You can hear him every Thursday right here on The Huddle. Thanks, John.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, guys. Normally we'd go behind enemy lines next with a 49ers reporter, but given the trade news this week, we're actually going to take you to Cincy to get to know the newest Seahawk. Bengals reporter Ben Baby joins us next on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back into The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Getting you guys ready for the Seahawks' upcoming game against the 49ers. We've got plenty to preview with San Francisco, but before we do that, we're going to spend a while looking at Seattle's newest acquisition. Your newest Seahawk is defensive end Carlos Dunlap. Joining us now to help us know a bit more about Carlos on and off the field is ESPN reporter Ben Baby. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are y'all doing?
Good, good. So, I mean, I'm just going to get started with it's a, I guess, a vague question, but one that we're all kind of wondering, which is what went wrong for Dunlap in Cincinnati?
Well, I think we could spend probably a whole segment on that
easily.
Alone. But, you know, I think you could just, if you look at what happened over the last couple of years, I think it's just a case of, you know, you had a guy who was really big under a previous regime. A new staff comes in, they've got a different idea for how things should look. And it just never really sat well. And I think that from the beginning, you could always say, honestly, since that Seattle game against the Bengals in 2019, you know, that debut game when you saw what the scheme was more or less going to look like, you got a sense of, okay, this might be an issue moving forward in the way that, you know, Lou Anarumo, the defensive coordinator, saw his defense as a 3-4 and Dunlap was not necessarily a 3-4 guy. I think that's really the heart of the matter. And then from there, things just kind of spiraled. You know, you had, I think Carlos more or less, you know, I think probably wasn't enthused about what was going on. And you could tell the numbers dropped off toward the end of last year. He picked things back up again, but this season, you know, did not really do much of anything for the most part, was benched. And then eventually, you know, it got to the point where it was best for both sides to part ways. And, you know, I think he'll probably end up doing pretty well, to be quite honest, out in Seattle. I just think that he probably needed a new start after you know, working with this staff for a couple seasons.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Ben, guys that come here from other teams, they're, like, blown away. It really is a really good sort of player-friendly atmosphere. Tell us, you know, they had a guy here, Jamal Adams, that they traded for that also made kind of a stink. Right. I mean, it wasn't, you know, and he's a great guy and a great teammate and everything, but he did just enough to get himself out of town, you know, get traded. And I'm assuming it's the same thing with Carlos, because it sounds like from everybody's account that he's a good dude.
Yeah, I think he was well liked around the community. I think, you know, in the locker room, you know, I'm sure there were some various opinions about him over the years, but, you know, by and large, I think, you know, especially, you know, his teammates and guys in the position group had a lot of good things to say, guys who have all spoken publicly the last couple of days, have a good thing to say about Carlos. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. I know that the Seahawks need some consistent edge rush. And I think, you know, Carlos is best used when he put his hand in the dirt. I think anyone can kind of, can tell you that. And when he's doing that, you know, he can be effective. You know, Carlos has never been, you know, a really high-digit sack guy, only broken 10 or more sacks during once in his career so far. You know, last year came close with a late push. But, you know, I think he's always had the natural tools and the ability. I think it's always just about his motor. And I think for Pete Carroll, that's going to be the biggest thing, is can they tap into Carlos's, motor. And I think, you know, with him, you know, with everything that's happened this season, I would expect him to be very motivated to go out and do well. So that shouldn't be an issue this year. And, you know, if it ends up being a problem, luckily, you know, for the Seahawks, the cap hit, you know, they'll be able to, you know, save upwards of $11 million if they decide to cut him before next season. So really, this is a low-risk play for them, and I think this really works out well, like I said, for both sides.
Ben, he hasn't had 10 sacks, but our leading sacker last year was 4. So if we can get anything above
we'll take
that,
it.
We will be surely happy here in Seattle. But, Ben, one of the big questions, and you kind of addressed it a little bit, is here in Seattle, outside of the personal issues that he had with the organization, is can this guy still play? Can this guy still contribute at a high level? Physically, has he dropped off? Was it noticeable, or is this a guy who just was eventually left out of a organization that was ready to move on or changing to a new scheme?
Yeah, I think it's really just a motor issue. And let's not sleep on my boy Alton Robinson. I've known him since he was in high school. And I think actually my first job, I saw Jamal Adams when he was at Hebron. So both of those guys I've seen over the years. But I honestly think, on a side note, I think Alton, has a lot of tools. I was always impressed with him. And I think he's a really good sleeper candidate to do well over there. But aside from that being said, Carlos, I do think it was simply just a motor thing. I think it was more or less he was kind of checked out, in the story we ran today on ESPN, that the team meeting rooms was repositioned just so they could make sure that Carlos was staying engaged during meetings. And I think that spoke volumes as kind of where the disconnect was on both sides. And I think there's definitely fault on both sides of this situation. I think that, yes, Carlos probably should have been used better in the scheme. And, yes, Carlos's effort probably should have been better. And that's one thing under this new staff, I think, that they don't really have a tolerance for. And so that's kind of why you saw what happened over the course of the last few weeks. But, I think you saw the press conference from head coach Zach Taylor yesterday. You saw the reaction from Carlos. I think everyone is just relieved that this situation's over from both sides. And now they can move on, Carlos. Like I said, I think he's going to be pretty productive in Seattle for the rest of this year. I think he's got some juice left. He's pretty well rested. He hasn't really played a ton of snaps this year, so that should go well for the Seahawks during the rest of the season.
If he had a good attitude, but he were playing poorly, would he still have been benched, or the reverse? I guess what I'm getting at is, what really led to the benching? Was it because he was playing poorly or not contributing, or was it because of his attitude?
I think it's probably a mix of both, but I think that the performance was probably just because he just wasn't really enthused about what was going on. I mean, even in his exit interview yesterday with the team website, of all people, he said, this was a 4-3 scheme, or a 3-4 scheme. I'm not really a 3-4 guy. And you just got a sense of, he just wasn't really, he wasn't really thrilled about what was going on. And I didn't really ever think, to be honest with you, I was never really convinced he was just angling for a trade. I think he was just upset with what had gone on because, the franchise, the front office really thought highly of him all the way through. I mean, the fact that Mike Brown put out a statement yesterday, was pretty rare, because Mike Brown does not do that very often. I mean, this is my second year covering the team. He hasn't had a press conference once since the start of the 2019 season. So for him to come out and say something about Carlos is pretty big. And, I think that the effort, probably predicated the, the play and the performance and the fact that he only has one sack. And, I think that, that should change now that he is in a new place and at a new team.
What's he like as a locker room presence and also off the field? I mean, tell us a bit more about Carlos Dunlap, the person, the teammate.
Yeah, a lot of guys, had good things to say. Carl Lawson, spoke really highly of him at defensive end. Joe Burrow said that, Carlos helped him out, in adjusting. I think Carlos is big into, getting your body right. I think he's been suggesting chiropractors to guys in Cincinnati for a little bit. And so I'm sure the rookies appreciate that when they make that adjustment. And then, he's obviously, anyone who follows him on Instagram knows he's big into cooking, has a restaurant out in Miami. Does a lot of community initiatives and there were games last year where the Bengals got absolutely pummeled, and nobody really wanted to talk, and Carlos Dunlap was more than happy to do that. And so, it is kind of a strange ending, to Carlos's tenure here. I think that he was really well liked, by the fan base, and the fan base does kind of understand kind of what's going on too. And, it's just one of these things, for whatever reason in Cincinnati, you have these things where, veterans who play for a while have some very unceremonious departures, in the Oakland. Carson Palmer jumping out to mind a few years ago. So, I think it's just one of those situations. He's, the franchise's all-time sack leader, and I think guys knew what they were getting. And when Carlos turned it on, I think he he's, you know, right up there and has, you know, he can definitely get after the pass rusher or get after the quarterback. So I'm very curious to see, you know, how this shakes out with him in Seattle.
He is Ben Baby of ESPN. You can follow him at Ben_Baby. Also read his stuff at ESPN.com. He's got a really cool article, by the way, for any LSU or Bengals fans out there about Joe Burrow getting help from the Manning family. It's a great one. I do recommend it. So, Ben, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate the insight.
Yeah, thank y'all for the kind words and for the time. I appreciate it.
All right.
Wow, I wish I could get that kind of dedication from Stacey Ross. That's fantastic.
I'm going to be like, Dan Wyman is joining us now on the huddle. Great guy, Dan. A former quarterback? You're a former quarterback, Dan? That's last
time. Oh, just forget it. Don't forget about it.
All right. Listen up, guys. Listen up. This offensive line has been much improved this season, but they might still have their hands full against the 49ers defense. Nick Bosa or no? We'll ask former lineman and current Seahawks pre- and post-game show host Ray Roberts about that matchup next on the huddle.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, we're going to be joined shortly by Ray Roberts, who's a host on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show, former offensive lineman himself. Before we're joined by Ray, we're going to talk a bit about the offensive line through what's now 7 weeks, 6 weeks, six games in the NFL so far. They've been much improved, I think, even though they've taken a step forward, you know, as far as the eye test and pass protection. It doesn't always look like that as far as stats go. We asked Ray about it last week. He said, yeah, I see that too. I see them taking a step forward there. You know, Dave, we'll just start with some of the depth already. They don't have BJ Finney anymore. Not that he was really contributing a lot to depth there. But they did lean on some backups at guard, specifically with Jordan Simmons helping them out. Mike Iupati didn't practice again yesterday, could once again be out this week. What have you seen from Simmons and just from the depth on the offensive line overall?
It's been solid, and I think the part where it was the most – well, here's my indicator. Bob Stelton is no longer complaining about the offensive line.
That's how you know.
Yeah. So
yeah.
And that was a pretty regular occurrence from Bob. But, no, it's been good. I mean, Russ has had time, and you see that, you know, his yards per attempt is one of the best in the NFL, or the highest, I should say, and that just indicates that he's getting time to throw the ball. So, you know, they threw a lot of stuff at him and this offense, and you had a rookie running back out there trying to pick up blitzes, and that didn't work so well. So, but no, I think, honestly, they've been really good. And I just wanted to give a shout-out to Dwayne Brown. Twice for what would be 47 yards, I think. One was 13 yards, the other one was 34, where he pulled around the outside. And I mentioned that play earlier where DK blocks down and then Dwayne Brown pulls around. And, you know, he is 35 years old, and he's really done a good job, really a good job of, you know, keeping Russell clean. So, yeah, just the offensive line in general has been a really pleasant surprise. And the other thing, too, you know, Jamarco Jones, I think, is a really good football player. He's available. They kind of, you know, like I said earlier, they've substituted them in the Miami game, which I thought worked really well. So it was nice to see.
Jake, you do a lot of tape study here. I know this 49ers defensive line doesn't have Nick Bosa anymore. They're short a couple other starters in the front seven. But as far as what you've seen from the Seahawks offensive line, how do you think that matchup will stack up?
Well, it's certainly going to be a challenge because even though they lose some guys, or the 49ers have lost some guys to injuries, they still have a good group rushing the passer. I mean, that's particularly in the interior. You still have Eric Armstead, who can play inside, outside. You know, they do twists and stunts to get him inside against guards sometimes. And then Javon Kinlaw, their first-round pick of this year, I thought played really well. So you look at some of those things, and I think that it's going to be a test to Ethan Posick, Damian Lewis, and Jordan Simmons. But to go on in Jordan Simmons and the job that he's done, two straight starts for Mike Iupati. This is from Brady Henderson of ESPN. He threw out a stat here on Twitter that's now he is the seventh best pass block win rate of any NFL offensive lineman at 96.3%, which is third best among guards. So when you talk about Jordan Simmons' effort, he's playing really good football right now.
Dave, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
You pointed out the you know, the rookie running back and DJ Dallas sort of struggling to block, particularly late in the game after Homer went out. Did it seem like maybe in overtime late in the fourth quarter that Arizona suddenly just got creative defensively and kind of overwhelmed the Seahawks offensive line, which is maybe part of what led to Russell throwing that last pick?
Yeah, absolutely. They just took a ton of chances there. And I thought it was, you know, look, that could have not worked for Vance Joseph, their D coordinator. It could have not worked because Russ is a guy that can burn you in those situations. And they gambled and won on that one. And, you know, it looked like an easy pickup for DJ Dallas. But when you're a rookie and everything's moving so fast and you're like, we didn't go over this in practice. We didn't see this on film, and all of a sudden it's new. It's difficult. So I would, you know, I know a lot of people faulted DJ Dallas and, you know, took him down a notch in their mind as far as the kind of player that he is, but that's tough on a rookie. But yeah, they took a ton of chances at the end, you know, and I figure if you're Vance Joseph, you go, look, this guy's won 34 fourth quarter and overtime come from behind wins. Russell Wilson has, and you know, he's the best in these situations. You've seen the Minnesota film where he took him 95 yards. I don't want to sit back and just let this guy, you know, sit back there and throw the ball around. So I feel like it was he gambled and won on that one. And, you know, Russ will be better for it. The offense will be better for it because they've, you know, now they've seen that kind of gambling defense and how to pick it up in the future. But he definitely made the right call there. And, you know, he could have gotten burned there. You know, that could have been, instead of an interception, that could have been a touchdown and with Russell Wilson. And I'll take Russ in that situation every time. But, yeah, they just got more and more creative and more, you know, as far as the taking risk, they were at the high end of risk-taking there defensively.
Well, you look at those situations as well, Dave. Sometimes, as you know, as a defensive coordinator and as a defense, sometimes when your back's against the wall, you got to throw something out there, right? Like you have to just kind of see what sticks because nothing's working. And if it works, then great. And very rarely do you see Russell Wilson and this offense not have an answer. And that's what it looked like at the end of that game. And you got to... you know that those guys are going to take that personally, that they are going to look at that situation and say, man, we did not perform well in this situation. That can never happen again. And so I think the defenses are going to try, the 49ers might try to implement some of those same type of schemes or be a little bit more aggressive from time to time. And hopefully the Seahawks, the offensive coaching staff, Russell Wilson, and this group as a whole have really ironed that out during the week so that they can be better in those situations.
Can we take a look at the other side of the ball, at least for San Francisco? I expected this defense to struggle a lot more than they are without Nick Bosa and Solomon Thomas. So far, you've seen them kind of come out okay. Hyder, who's the guy filling in, and I think a right defensive end, Kerry Hyder, he's leading the team in sacks right now. I mean, they've been able to still bring pressure. It hasn't been the 49ers defensive line we saw last year, but they've been pretty good without some of their stars. Dave, when you look at this group, I mean, are they still pretty dangerous? Who do you have an eye on here when you're, you know, up in the booth with Steve this weekend?
Well, I think Fred Warner, and I know that whoever was doing the game last week, Tony Romo, I think, called him the best linebacker in the NFL. And he's got a couple picks. He's got a ton of tackles for loss. So he really stands out. And that was the guy that we used to call him Shoeless Fred Warner because he's the one that lost his shoe and Russ picked it up and threw it off to the sidelines.
Oh, that was very controversial.
Yeah, that's right.
At the time.
Yeah, it was at home. But I think Robert Saleh does a really good job. It's the same type of standard that you get from on the offensive side as well. And it's just the Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch sort of formula that – they do things that are, you know, there's some creative stuff too, but they're pretty simple. And I think they just teach about winning at the point of attack, and it's like basics. And so that's why I feel like you kind of plug guys in their running game and then on defense as well, that they've had a fair amount of success. I mean, they've actually, look at their fifth in the NFL in scoring and yardage, and yet they've lost, you know, Dee Ford and Bosa. I mean, it's just been nothing but injuries, and they just keep plugging those guys in and do really well. And, you know, they're third against the pass, and no Richard Sherman, and they've got a, had a bunch of defensive backs injured, and then of course the pass rush was depleted. So it's just a well-coached team, and I've always admired them in that regard, and always I hate that they're in our division. And I don't like complimenting the 49ers.
You want to be able to root for them from afar,
yeah,
is what you're saying.
But you can't. So they're doing a really good job with what they have. And sometimes, you know, when your back's up against the wall and, you know, you get your guys hurt, there's kind of a rally cry that happens. And, you know, and the coaches, you can do a really good job as a coach getting a guy going, getting a player going by saying, hey, man, we believe in you. And, you know, just because we lost this guy and that guy, we want you to step up. We're fully, you know, we're behind you. We back you. We know that you can go in there and do the job. And I feel like that you get a lot of that from what I understand from their coaching staff down there.
You know, I've been wondering about Saleh a lot lately. I mean, he's a guy that was here from 2011 to 2013. You know, he was not let go, but he got another opportunity in Jacksonville, then ended up in San Francisco. But of all the guys that we could have, or maybe that you would have wanted to hold on this defensive staff over the years, that's one that I feel like really got away. I mean, Chris Richard's now gone. Even Norton was gone for a time. Don't you feel like, man, I'd love to have that guy back here? Like, it would have been nice to have him as a defensive coordinator.
Well, I mean, you know, I know that Kenny is being questioned a lot right now. And, you know, as far as, you know, what they're doing defensively, it's not good right now. What the Seahawks are, it's historically bad right now. But, you know, we talked to Pete the other day, and he said, look, I'm in these meetings too. And we've always said this. This is Pete's defense. So it's similar to what went on last year. It's like, look, we're going to win. You know, we're going to keep everything in front of us, and we're going to try to take the ball away. And that's the one time they didn't. They yeah. didn't win the turnover battle. And that's the thing, you know, we've talked about is this sustainable? And at some point, you're not going to get the fourth quarter big play out of Benson Mayoa, or you're not going to get the K.J. Wright interception and fumble recovery. And when that happens, you're probably going to lose, and the way that they're giving up yardage right now. But again, you know, this is how they managed it last year. They feel like with the talent that they have, that this is the defense that they need to play. And it got them 12 wins last year, and right now it's got them at 5-1. So, you know, I know the numbers are bad, and it's historically bad and everything, but, you know, you also kind of coach to your entire team. And you, right now, I mean, over the last year and a half or year and five games, six games, they're, what are they, like 17-7, you know? So, I mean, look, that's a pretty good record, and that's kind of how they're coaching right now. But I keep feeling, do you guys feel like there's not enough talent on this defense? Because I feel like there is enough talent. I'd say it's middle of the road. If you put, you know, guys like Bobby and KJ, Jamal, premier players, maybe some of the other guys are more like, you know, but whatever, they're about average. They should have those kinds of numbers, and they don't.
Let's continue this conversation with the voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel. I like this question, Dave. We'll ask Steve next on The Huddle.